Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
They've already conquered the Grammys. Now, Billie Eilish and her brother, Finneas O'Connell, are taking on the Oscars with their first nomination for the song from No Time to Die. No Time to Die. They're here to talk about it today on Crew Call. So, Barbara Broccoli flew to you guys. While you were performing. To me, that doesn't sound like an audition.
Oh, it felt like one.
It sure felt like one.
Well, tell me about that meeting. She hands you 23 pages of the script. I mean, tell me about that, because to me, Billie, let's round it up. You got 200 million followers on social media. Bond, he skews older. They need a younger crowd. You're the window. You're it.
I guess so. I mean, it's funny. It really didn't, you know, when they asked us, it wasn't, we didn't have a feeling of like, oh yeah, we're the perfect, you know, we're the perfect people to do this. It was like, oh no, like somebody else should do this. Like we were dying to do it, but we definitely didn't feel worthy at all. And again, like it really was not a you got the job thing. It was a let's see if you have what it takes kind of thing, and not in like a weird reality show thing way, but very, you know, it might work and also it might not, and we'll see. And
by the way, well, if I were producing a Bond movie, that's what I would do. I wouldn't,
yeah, for sure,
you guys have the job until I'd heard a really good song.
Agreed.
Well, Billie, do you know, you're introspective, you know, you're bluesy, so is James Bond. Do you feel like he's a soulmate? Like it was easy to write for, like that both of you go through similar emotions and whatnot?
I mean, I don't kill people and like, you know, go right on crazy adventures, but I think that what's so great about Bond is that he has a lot of qualities that everybody feels like they understand. And I think that that's what's so attractive about the franchise and about the Bond character, is just like, he's a kind of person with a kind of life that nobody has, and that you can't relate to his life, but you can relate to everything else. You can relate to, you know, the underlying meanings behind everything and why he does what he does and this and that, and I think that's what's so impactful about it. And for sure, I mean, when we started writing it, it was really hard to get into the zone, because we had a lot of like things we wanted to accomplish in making this song, and we wanted it to be really, really good, and that obviously is hard to start, you know, with that in your mind. But once we started and we got those few melodies that were going to make the song what it is, it was so easy to just write. I mean, like, it just really came to us once we like hit that first stride.
Yeah, it's true.
We just like it, the song just like wrote itself for us. So yeah, for sure. It was easy to get in the mind of him. And I hate the word easy, because it wasn't easy. It was just, it like flowed naturally, more like, you know.
Was it always Bond talking to Madeline?
In a lot of ways, yeah. I think that what we like to do is that we write certain lines about a certain situation, but we also really like to keep it up to interpretation. So you could listen to it, and if you were to, you could think of it as a bunch of different situations. So like, I feel like, Phineas, you can speak to this, but like, I feel like we never try to write where you couldn't relate it, the song or the lyrics, to any other thing. Like, we don't want you to just hear it and be like, oh, that could only possibly be about one thing. We want it to feel like, you know, you could think of it in all sorts of ways. But yeah, for the most part, I think it was jumping into the mind of James Bond and what he's gone through and the emotions that he was going through right then.
Was it always part of the plan to have the orchestra?
I think it was, it felt like that was probably going to happen. And because of that, what I didn't want to do when we sent in the demo was I didn't want to like do a bad fake one. Like I was like, you know, they'll be able to imagine this with a 70 piece orchestra. I don't have to pretend to do one. So the demo that we sent, which I think you can buy, like I think on Record Store Day, we put out a version where the B-side was the demo. It's all of the same vocals as the final, and it's the piano, it's some bass, it's a little percussion, and then it's this train whistle sound. And the, you know, once Hans came on board and, you know, told us that we should see the movie and sort of invited us out to London to watch it, you know, I was like, okay, now we're talking, now there's going to be orchestra on this song. And, you know, if I were trying to do it myself, I would have been trying to imitate a Hans Zimmer score. So it was pretty awesome to have like the sword doing the, you know, orchestral arrangement for that song. It was really
the cut that you saw. Did it show Bond dying, or did they hold that from you as well?
Wait, are you telling us Bond dies?
It did actually show him dying. And so you can imagine, you know, we watched that first cut in December of 2019, and the movie didn't come out until what, September of 2021? What was that? Was it that? I don't know what it was.
Well, end of September, I think, in UK. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, keeping that secret for that long was pretty rough. And, you know, it wasn't like it was a secret I just kept and didn't tell. People asked me all the time, like constantly people were asking me what happens. And I was like, I'm not fucking telling you. Like, what the hell? Like what? So yeah, crazy.
I've heard you guys talk about, you had these rules in writing the song. You came up with you had your own standards and whatnot. Can you expound on that? Were you wrestling with bridges? Were there certain progressions, chord progressions that you were trying to perfect? Could you tell me about some of the rules that you had, that you were, sure, the pressure you were putting on yourself?
Sure. I think that within the context of Bond, there's not necessarily a right way to do it, but there were a lot of things that we wanted to achieve. We wanted the title of the film to be the title of our song. We wanted the title of our song to be the hook of the song. We wanted there to be a incredibly sort of like recognizable instrumental melody that the strings could play throughout the film, because Inspector and several other movies, the score interpolates like the theme song. And I just thought, you know, if we don't have beautiful melodies, then we're not doing our job. You know, I think the other rules for us were like, we wanted to really have that Bond feel on a sort of a, you know, melodic and sort of chordal plane, like to get technical about it, like the minor nine chord is that, you know, chord that Johnny plays at the end. And I think that we just wanted it to be so, like, even if you heard our song and you didn't know that we had done a Bond theme, you'd be like, this sounds like a Bond theme. I think that was really important to us.
Yeah.
Now, tell me, how did it all start? Did, like, particularly with this song, did Billy, did you start writing some lyrics down? And Phineas, did you get out the guitar or get on the piano and just jam?
Well, it started really with a couple days of not knowing what the fuck to do. So that was that was all of the things we could think of. We played guitar and piano and did some, you know, tried to come up with some melodies, come up with some lyrics, come up with a beat. Like it, that, those were the few days of like, where the hell do we even start here? And then where the song really actually started to bloom was Phineas playing the piano. He has a studio set up in his green room when we're on tour, and we were at the time in between weekends of ACL, and we did a few shows in Texas, and so we were in one of the venues during that week, and Phineas was on his little, at his little piano, and we were in the same room, and we were just kind of coming up with melodies, and I remember him being like, dude, I think I came up with one. And it was that beginning, that and that just like, oh gosh, like we both were like, oh, okay. This is it. This is the start. So that was how it started. And then it was really about finding the melodies that were gonna make the song feel like the best it could. And I started improvising melodies right then, and I think I was just coming up with some lyrics at the same time. I'm assuming that's usually how it goes at the beginning. And that was kind of the, I should have known whatever I'd leave alone, that whole part. And then the next step was coming up with the melody for the chorus, which we don't always do it that way. Usually we kind of do lyrics at the same time as the melody. And for this, we really wanted to get the melody of the chorus down and make sure that it was really solid and very Bond and very beautiful, and then come up with the lyrics that went with it. So we committed to it, and we eventually got to that pre-chorus and that chorus and went from there. And it really just like made it created itself after we did that.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
When did you know, okay, this is a lock. We got it. We submitted the song. They're keeping it. Was it when you went to that December 2019 screening, or to that screening, screening of the film?
It was it kind of all of it. I mean, we didn't. Yeah, you're kind of right there. We were like on a plane to London, you know, kind of being like, well, I guess we got the job. But I remember being in the studio, Air Studios, when we were recording, and I remember thinking like, is this even going to be the right, like, are they going to use this? Like, I honestly had this thought of like, I don't know if we even got the job yet, because, you know, Daniel had to be the one to sign off on it. And, you know, it's a really big film. It's a really big deal to him. It's fucking his entire last, what, 15, 17 years or something. And, you know, that's a lot for him. And it's, you know, it was his last film. It was something that has taken over his life for as long as he's done it. And, you know, been incredibly important. And of course, this movie is going to be the most important one because it's the last one and the song needs to be good. And so I knew that. And so for me, I was just like, I didn't know if it was going to be good enough for him. And I didn't know if he would want it to be different. And so that was kind of where my head was at during the recording in London. And then it went in the movie and it was great. And then when we met Daniel Craig, he was just the most charming, most just kind, amazing person. And he was so complimentary. And it meant so much to me because, again, I was just constantly like, oh my God, is he not going to like it? He's not going to like it. He's not going to want to use it. It's not good enough for his huge, huge last movie for, you know, something he's given his entire life to. So I was really excited that he liked it.
Eventually. And no notes from the producer.
I mean, we like Phineas, you can talk more about that. We got like, it was very collaborative. It really was. I mean, people say that sometimes and they don't mean it. And this was very collaborative. And they really listened to us and like believed in us. And it really wasn't like, oh, that's bad. Do it this way. And there's no other way. It was really like, well,
I would say that also the final version sounded pretty close to the demo. I would say that like there were versions in the middle that were where we maybe over embellished and it got a little intense, but I would say the final version sounded a lot like the demo, which I think was on purpose. I think people really liked our demo and the simplicity of it. But we really, you know, we owe a lot to Hans and Stephen Lipson and Johnny Marr. I think they made the song so much better. And, you know, they worked really hard with us. And obviously once we had recorded the strings, like we flew home, like we, you know, we couldn't move to London. We had touring and stuff. So it was really like they were the boots on the ground, making sure that Daniel Craig felt listened to because they were there with him in person. So that was really helpful too.
And you guys love this, writing songs for films. I got to think, you've got the job with Pixar writing three songs immediately after this.
Yeah, that was really fun.
And so you guys like this process, because for some songwriters and performers, it's like, no, too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah, I think that because of the way that our creative process works, like, we like the collaboration because we do so little of it. It's like just the two of us. And so film is a really good way for us to you know, invite people in. I would say that like with our albums, you know, they're so personal to us. So it's like, if people were coming in and giving us a million ideas, like we'd maybe be annoyed. But I think because of a film, you're like, hey, like no sweat, like this is your movie. Like this isn't our, you know, album. So we're much more open to rounds of feedback and notes and criticism. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So Prince used to do these midnight shows in LA at the last minute. I know you've got some tour dates in LA, but do you guys do that? Do you like go under some fake name under social media and everyone knows it's the two of you and show up at midnight, I don't know, at Largo?
Oh, that's cool. We have so many shows on our calendar and we have such a awesome team that we employ. I think we'd have to be a little more guerrilla with a show like that. We'd have to like bring our own stuff in the trunk of our car and arrange it ourselves. Here's my bet. I could be wrong. I bet when we're making Billy's next album in earnest and we're not on tour, I bet we do a couple of those shows to like
love it.
We'll do like, and maybe we'll do like the things where you put everybody's phone in a bag so they can't record and stuff. Like maybe,
yeah,
a way to like maybe share some new stuff. But we're definitely like, we have so many shows going on right now that I think we're on a day off, we take the day off.
You guys are great. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Take care.
Ciao. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Crew Call podcast on Deadline. I'm your host, Anthony D'Alessandro. Make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode.